Sahrawi people? How successful have you been in getting them to stop buying them?
I think one of the main achievements of Sahrawis have been at the European Court of Justice different resolutions from 2015 until last one, September 2021, when it says that the European Union and Morocco could not engage in commercial agreement that involves Western Sahara, because the European Court of Justice considers the Western Sahara territory as separate and distinct from the Moroccan territory. And this is one of the main achievements. However,
Sahrawi climate activist Mahfoud Beshri with Western Sahara is not for sale. I spoke to him at the UN Climate Summit in Sharm el-Sheikh, Egypt. To see all of our coverage of the COP in Sharm el-Sheikh, as well as our coverage from Cairo, Egypt, you can go to democracynow.org. Also there, you can watch our documentary, 4 Days in Occupied Western Sahara, Africa's Last Colony. That does it for our show. Democracy Now! Is produced with Renee Fels, Mike Furtke, Nagesda Messiah-Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Tarasena, Tammy Warrenoff, Tarina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamari Astudio, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Hani Masood, and Mary Conlin. Our general manager is Julie Crosby. Special thanks to Becca Staley, John Randolph, Paul Powell, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Nogueira, Hugh Grant, Dennis Moynihan, David Prude, and Dennis McCormick. Also thanks to Hani Masood and Sharifa Belkadus. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at kboo.fm.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The Engineering Committee meets on the first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify if a meeting...
Hi, this is Pat Metheny. You're listening to Radio KBOO here in Portland.
Good morning. You are listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station, KBOO.FM. Today is the 28th of November. The year is 2022. And I am Cecil Prescott. I'm joined by...
And I am Celeste Carey. And good morning, all.
Hey, Celeste, how are you this morning?
I am well. I am appreciating things like good coffee, good conversation, chilly weather with crisp, bright skies. There we go. That's my morning poetic interest.
Excellent. That looks like a beautiful morning behind you. Is that just a background that is in the sun and the clouds? Well, it
actually, yeah, it is. It's a picture I took, and I just uploaded it in my background. Yeah.
Well, it looks lovely. It looks lovely. So. Yeah.
And you?
I'm doing well this morning. I sort of paused because just before we came on, it was this introduction, and it said Pat Metheny, and that was a name I haven't heard in a very long time. So I had to look up Pat Metheny. Oh, what is Pat doing these days? But that's neither here nor there. But I wanted to know whether, you know, a lot of people had time to gather with families and friends, and lest I out our engineer, he mentioned that he was able to have a pleasant time with his family over the holiday weekend. And, you know, holidays can be kind of stressful for people for many reasons.
Yes, they can. Yes, they can. Because you try to come to a holiday season and a holiday gathering with family and have open mind and open heart and hope that the conversation, though the topics may be open, will be even-handed and fair and engaging and fun, et cetera, and they're not always that. But it's not just family that has that problem. I mean, it's the human family in general, when you stop and think about it. And we have lots of topics that we deem off-limits for family gatherings. And we have lots of topics that we deem danger zones, you know, for the public. And even some words that try to indicate that certain topics, certain discussions are going to be dangerous and possibly, you know, traumatic. But the issue is, in your families, maybe you need to find a way to either declare things off limits so you can strengthen other elements of the relationship. So no politics, you know, no religion, no talking about Uncle Gerald's comb over, you know, or whatever. But in society at large, those large conversations, those difficult conversations have to be had. Because sometimes we don't have those constraints, or we feel those constraints with each other aren't necessary.
And the topics that are allowable, we, you know, each family, each situation, each group, you know, have certain areas that people may or may not know, or places where you do not go because it raises issues. So it might be, you know, over politics or religion or sports team or what type of pie you want to eat. And, you know, sometimes if you don't read the rule book before you go, you could get into trouble or find yourself in a I don't want to say necessarily an argument, a disagreement, or an area that raises one's blood pressure, because we just don't know how or if we are able to have meaningful communications with those around us. So it is not only because of the heightened political atmosphere generally that people have talked about over the last few years, but it manifests itself in the way we engage one another in conversations or do not engage one another in conversations, so that it is sometimes very difficult to have conversations with people we would like to, but perhaps we don't know how to do it. And so I wonder, do we need to agree on areas not to talk about before we gather, or are there ways in which we are able to have those conversations even though they are raise issues of concerns that might reveal disagreement or an inability to move forward?
Well, you know, one of the techniques we use is comedy, humor. And to cut to the chase, recently we've heard conversations among comedians regarding Dave Chappelle's handling of difficult conversations. It's not the first time he has been an opener, if you will, for difficult conversations. And so we use humor a lot. And I would like to kind of take a meta view of this whole idea of how we're opening things up for difficult conversations as a species, well, especially as an American society, U.S. society, but the handling of difficult conversations. Not to focus specifically on the topic matter that, you know, that Dave Chappelle was speaking on, but the fact that he was even saying, you know, by people having knee-jerk, polarized reactions to some of the things that he said, it makes it harder for us as a community to talk about them. And we are prone to run into our own corners and, you know, emphatically speaking on why we are right and why there is no middle ground or the gray area. And so we're in extreme positions, and it makes it harder. Now, of course, the way things have gone politically and economically in this country over the past few years, I'll say over the past 8 years, has shown us that we have both the capacity to be more civil, and we demonstrate often the capacity to be just absolutely barbaric. So learning to talk to each other, learning how to find that middle ground to broach the subject is key to our continued success, not only as society, you know, or a culture, but really as a country, because that ability to work through, to talk about, to know how to frame, and then be willing to discuss difficult points and topics is a key to democracy, you know.
Well, and democracy begins in small places. So one, I appreciate the way how you frame the question for us, but I don't want people to feel either intimidated or limited by what they can say, because it's not only talking about big geopolitical issues. It's about how we have conversations with those around us. So if you are willing, please give us a call at 503-231-8187. We will not ask whether or not you celebrated a holiday this past week or not, but how did it get along? How did you get along with those people that you don't ordinarily encounter, but you had to? What did you do to, how did you manage? Were you able to have meaningful conversation with those you disagree with? I'm interested in examples of not only conversations, but ways in which you handled it. Our numbers are 503-231-8187. And give us a call and share your thoughts and examples of having, don't like to say the word difficult, but that's often used in parlance, difficult conversations with those around us.
Yeah.
And let's go to caller. Corey has some wisdom to share with us about how to talk with people, talk to people. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Cecil Celeste. I don't know about wisdom. I made the decision to get a PhD, so I don't know how wise I am. That was a bad decision. But anyway, because I work in academia, I do have tough conversations with students, faculty, and staff, and everything that you're saying makes a lot of sense. But I guess where I'm at is that I see a lot of people who make comments, and they have this thing known as the Dunning-Kruger effect. It's just when a person's lack of knowledge and skills in a certain area causes them to overestimate their own competence. And it's basically that there are a lot of, and I'm not trying to be rude, but there are a lot of dumb people that say things that try to sound intelligent, or they make comments like, well, I did my own research. I'm like, well, unless it's peer-reviewed, just because you Google something that basically satisfies what you need to satisfy, that's not doing your own research. So I'm all about having those conversations, but what I realize is that I guess I'm also in a silo at times. Most of the people that I deal with are people in academia. But even in those silos, in my, you know, expertise being, you know, someone who has the title of diversity officer, I'm realizing there's a lack of intelligence when it comes to having tough conversations. So someone the other day was discussing critical race theory, and I'm listening to this person, and I asked them straight up, can you tell me three tenets of critical race theory? And they couldn't, and they're giving a presentation on it. And I'm like, the key concept of CRT is that race is a social construct. So when I see all these people like, oh, I'm against critical race theory, like, you don't even know what you're against. You just don't want to talk about anything to deal with race. CRT has been just wrapped up in anything dealing with anti-racism. If you say woke is just code for black. And so that's what's happening now, is that you have intelligent people who are pretending to be stupid so that stupid people will listen to them. And I find that to be the most, just having the most, you know, they're not conversations had in good faith. And so many times that's what I'm dealing with. And so there are a lot of people out there who are out there talking that have no idea what they're talking about. And that is utterly frustrating. So I'm all about having the conversation, but I guess I'm also, as I get older, like I call it like that, my Cecil and Celeste moments when I get older. I'm like, you know what? You just sound stupid. And I just look at like, you're not saying anything worthwhile. You're just saying things because you want someone to basically agree with you. And I see a lot of that, and I don't want to take up too much of your time, but there are places to have conversations. But when you, like, you don't have to be a PhD, but when you're discussing issues when it comes to equity, when it comes to women's rights, when it comes to anything in the vein of social justice, and you're doing it through a lens of ignorance, then no, I don't want to talk to you because you're not having the conversation in good faith. You're just talking, and I just break it down like, you just don't like black people. You just don't like gay people. Just come out there and say it, then we can actually work on it. But don't try to gaslight me and, you know, well, Corey, you know, Martin Luther King would have been a Republican. I'm like, shut up. You know, like, shut up. You know, people come into my office, like, you know, somebody came to my office the other day, like, or, you know, they tried to gaslight me. I sure do miss Obama. I'm like, get out of my office. Like, that has nothing to do. If you want to engage with me as a human being, as an individual. Don't try to gaslight me. If you don't understand what diversity, equity, and inclusion is, that's fine. That's my job to teach you. But don't pretend you know something about something you don't know because you have a PhD in communication, et cetera, et cetera. So I'll just leave it at that, because I think you're right. We need to have the conversation, but sometimes we also need to call out people that don't know what the hell they're talking about. Excuse my language. I'll talk to y'all later.
All right, thanks for your call.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. He opened up so many other topics, you know. You got to have integrity. You got to have honesty, you know, because he's right. There are people who do this stuff. And I want to ask him, what's your point? So you sure do miss Obama. Why? You know, well, I just miss him. You know why? No, I don't. Explain to me, you know, and call out this stuff. But it's hard because then people want to get all defensive and say, well, you're attacking me. It's like, no.
Right.
I'm asking you to account for something you said. I have a high value of personal accountability. And, you know, and I'm not saying I've never dropped a ball, and I'm not saying I've never dragged my feet, you know, but I know that I'm accountable in that. So at some point, if I really want to have
I want to have my ego not be unnecessarily torched, and I want to sleep at night. I'm gonna do the right thing, you know.
Right.
You know, but that I know, and I ain't perfect. I'm not saying that, but I wonder how the people feel about that when you're being bombarded by, you know, some baseless concepts and conversations when somebody comes to you with nonsense. You can't even have a conversation.
Well, and when people say, as Corey mentioned, people say, well, I did my research, which is...
What does that mean?
So what do you do when you have, do you have conversations with those who are different, who have different ring opinions, and how do you manage that? And again, this can be talking about climate change or talking about what type of dressing you should have on as with your meal. How do you have difficult conversation with that one person, or either you might have be in relationship with or not? Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. And again, we are in the midst of the season.
Membership drive,
yes. And we encourage you to become a member of KBOO, because this is your community radio station.
Absolutely. And they give you the freedom to hear things that matter to you without, you know, putting the corporate spin or the commercial repetitiveness and shallow programming. We try to go deep. We do. The number is 503-231-8187. And, you know, when you were talking about having conversations, I had this interesting thought. So you're in a community and somebody says something and you get a response from another person, perhaps says this, well, I feel like this, like you're attacking me, or I feel like you don't respect me. And you know you do, you know, and you've demonstrated before that you do. So when this person says this, you have to do something that's an interesting dance, because, you know, we tell people your feelings are valid. But,
yes,
you know, when you're having a difficult discussion and somebody tries to not engage by saying, well, I feel like you're attacking me, this is a difficult step. You got to tell them, well, I understand you feel that way, but it's not true. I'm not attacking you. And then they look at you crazy because you have violated one of the key commandments. You know, you're supposed to respect my feelings. You're supposed to, you know, never disregard them. But that feeling's not based in reality. What do you do? And that's one of the things that stops a conversation.
And let's have some conversation about that, because how do you respond to that? And, you know, I appreciate what you said just now, Celeste, how that can become a conversation stopper by saying that you are not respecting how I feel. And I'm reminded of a conversation I had in Sunday school a few weeks ago with a seven-year-old. And we were trying to talk about the golden rule. And that's a mantra in many traditions, do unto others that you would have others do unto you. Which sounds an excellent way to handle yourself. As I was going on with my spiel about doing unto others that you would have others do unto you, and this is the golden rule, Jania raised her hand and she said, well, in my school, we do not follow the golden rule. We follow the platinum rule.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And that, I said, oh, what is that? And Jania told me, well, do unto others as they would have you do unto them. Is that how it goes, Celeste?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, it's a little distilled down, but yeah, that's it.
And so it caused me to stop and think, well, maybe I should pause when people say that you're not honoring my feelings. Do I just immediately respond, well, I am, but you're just being an insensitive idiot? Or should I, how do I take what they say? Or is that just a conversation stopper? Is that a tactic that people use to prevent being challenged or critique? I'm confused. Give us a call at 503-231-8187. Help me out of my moral dilemma. How do we have conversation, especially when people say, my feelings are hurt?
Yeah, so you've been accused of any brand of phobia, you know, because you didn't respond in the way that they like it. And you know, I guess one way that we could, like, kind of frame this conversation is, you know, having those honest and meaningful conversations when some of the conversants aren't honest and aren't trying to go, you know, be meaningful. You know, they just are doing everything possible to thwart any attempt at an open, honest, potentially healing conversation. Now, let's go back to Dave Chappelle and use some of the ways that he's addressed things. And he's a lightning rod because he pushes us to look at how we build up our ideas and concepts and make them unassailable ivory towers, you know. He attacks sacred cows, and I guess some people feel like he's got some, you know, inordinate glee when he does it. It's like, you seem way too happy to be tackling these sacred cows. Well, he is a comedian by nature and by training, you know, so yeah, I guess he would have those kind of instincts. But at the same time, he presents very thoughtful ways of addressing challenges and issues in our time. And it may not always be what we want to hear from him, but the fact that he's at least broaching the subject is invaluable. You know, even though folks are really happy, you know, to say, nope, I don't pay attention to him, I have counseled him, you know, or not, or those who say, you know, they really appreciate it. So that pushing boundaries to the edge is important, but you got to do it with integrity. Oh, there comes that word again. Not good.
Well, let's go to our next caller.
Okay.
Holly, good morning. Holly.
Good morning. It's
Molly. Molly.
Molly. Hi, Cecil and Celeste.
Hi, Molly.
I want to say, in honor of Thanksgiving, how thankful I am for KBOO's morning talk shows and for especially for yours. Because this is a chance to communicate in a way. Well, let me just say right off the top, I don't have enough African-American friends and people in my life. And so this is a way that I can, as a white person, discuss with you. And I loved the person, the first caller, talking about he's an academia and everything. And I just love that. And I love being able to call in and talk on the show. For me, I had a family gathering, a long car drive, and so I just want to speak to the intergenerational communication, because I was so happy to see my grandson, who I never see because he's in San Francisco, and there's been COVID, and also his two, well, I'll just call them cousins because they basically are. We have an intergenerational family, so, but they're all the same age, and I just spent the entire time, well, the first day of Thanksgiving Day with them, going down to the creek, running around. We were in a beautiful place, and just becoming one of them and having at least, well, let's see, if I counted them, three or four huge crying outbreaks. It was three boys, so, you know, there's the problem of someone being left out and working that out. And they were all so different in their emotional. My cousin's son, my sister's littlest boy, well, he cried when my grandson broke his pencil and just had a huge outburst of tears because he had his homework to do. And I'm thinking, wow, those three boys are in school today, and I'm sure glad I'm not having to deal with that. But, you know, they really dealt with their emotions in different ways. But the bottom line is they loved each other, and they wanted to be together, and it worked out. But it was emotional, and it reminded me of, like, middle school or something, just drama.
Yeah.
And I loved being the kind of the Grandma Molly, the Aunt Molly person to help them work it out and see the other sides of where they other ones were coming from. And it was just a beautiful experience. I just miss that. I miss that being with the younger generations. And when I was in the schools with all the different, you know, the Asian, the Indian, the African American, the white, the all the different in one classroom where they did get to be together, because in their family environments or neighborhoods they weren't around so many different types of people. So I don't want to go on too much. I want to give other people a chance to talk, but I felt so thankful to have that experience. I felt so thankful to have a family and tradition that forces families, whether they're getting along together or not, to be together and remind each other who they are and what the different generations bring to the table and what the older generations can help the younger generations to see and the younger generations, the older ones to see. It's a fantastic tradition, and it's my favorite because it's just people and food.
Well, that's great. Could you tell us how old is your grandchildren and his cousin?
How old? Oh, nine. My grandson's nine.
Okay.
And then my sister's son, because she's 30 years younger than me, we have an intergenerational family, half-sister's son is eight, and then my cousin, who's in my generation, her grandson is seven. So it's seven,
okay.
Eight, nine.
Okay. So they're all right there around the same age. And
right.
And that's so fascinating. That's so great that you were able, you know, this intergenerational gathering. And I'm wondering, since you said that, you know, you see your grandchild only on occasion.
Right.
I have this habit because when I'm with family, I don't see, you know, like every day. It's sort of like, oh no, right. This is very valuable time. And I want to, like, make every moment special. And I have to guard myself against coming on too heavy, like, you know.
Right. Well, I just brought myself to their level because I wanted to be with everyone else in my family, not to mention I have a brand new baby niece, my youngest brother. We met little baby Ona for the first time, so that really, well, it made me feel young to have a niece that was just born, but I also have a grandson that's nine. So, but it was just a wonderful feeling of the new life and the older life. As we took our hike, my cousin and I was like, our hips are hurting and the kids are running ahead, and my brother and his beautiful mother of his child were sitting down and she was nursing against the tree, and it was just,
okay.
You know, it was just the whole feeling of life, and it brought back, you know, my cousin and I were going, we used to be the kids. Now we're the grandmas. How did this happen?
Wonderful.
But you do want to take every, I just had the same thing, Cecil, where I just wanted to savor every single moment because I knew it was going by way too fast. Now I'm back home, and who knows when I'll see any of them, again, you know, all of them,
yeah.
Next Thanksgiving.
Right.
Hopefully.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you so much. I'm so thankful for your show.
We're thankful for you and for you sharing. And
I love KBOO, and let me donate during this time. I'm always thinking about too, keeping it going.
Excellent.
Thank you so much.
Excellent. And you are listening to More Talk Radio on KBOO, your community radio station here in Portland. We are at the end of the year, but we also need you and your support so that we may continue this community, we may continue having this community gym for not only this year, but next year, not only for our generations, but for generations to come. Consider now how you may contribute and donate and be a participant in maintaining this community media resource, KBOO.FM. Go to our website, KBOO.FM/give, and offer what you have so that we may continue to do the things that we do. Thank you so much. And as Molly mentioned, it's sometimes difficult, but it's also important to gather with friends and family. And how do we manage those special times and avoid the difficult times? Let us know your thoughts. 503-231-8187. And Celeste, you were about to say?
Well, I was just going to pretty much say what you said about, you know, how do you keep these difficult conversations on the rails? You know, how do you make these connections? How do you point out that you value people, but you're willing to endure a little difficulty and discomfort, maybe even a little pain, to help the whole community gain. And we've talked about the need for them. We've talked about, you know, how sometimes people are just not honest and try to gaslight you by being stupid instead of demonstrating that they understand, you know, the urgency or the nuance of a point or a position, and how sometimes they won't just say, I don't like XYZ, and make a firm stance so that you can work with it. We've also talked about the value of humor and helping us not only have a pressure release valve, but to find a common language, if you will, or a humorous perspective by which to approach difficult points. You know, laughter is a healing thing, but laughter and comedy, laughter and humor are not the same thing. And so sometimes it's walking a thin line when you're trying to use humor to evoke laughter about a difficult subject, because sometimes people can feel that you're being reductive or you're glossing over their feelings.
Well, let's examine that a little bit more, because of the use of comedy specific, because words can be very powerful and can be used as a weapon, and so there are times when people use comedy not to enlighten, not to make, to clarify, but as a means of attack, so that, you know, the response is, oh, you're too so sensitive, I was just being funny. I think it's a poor response, because your intent was to hurt and you used the weapon of humor. So how do we balance that? And especially, you know, you mentioned, you know, prominent comics. Some of those who are edgy on purpose, and they consider themselves less successful if they do not make you uncomfortable. So what is the proper balance of humor in having these conversations. I understand that they may it might be used to make conversation easier, but also it sometimes make it more difficult. I may not immediately go to the comedian you mentioned or other comedians, like there was that comedian, shock comics that we can all name.
Howard Stern.
Well, I said we could all name, but I wasn't going to name them, but yes.
I'm just a good. Don't cut it.
But, yeah, examples like that. Uh-huh. Are there limits? Is it just, do we give them a pass because they're being edgy? Or are there some benefits from it?
Well, I think that goes back to something that Corey said, you know, about what is your point for bringing this up? Are you bringing it up to simply get some laughs? You know, I think the more successful, quote-unquote, edgy comics are the ones who don't bring something up just to get a laugh, but to bring something up to make you think and to make you talk and to poke you and prod you in those delicate places so you have to respond, you know? I'm going to throw out a name, and you tell me what you think. Dick Gregory.
Yes. This social critic, comedian, activist from the 1960s. And, he's a comic social critic.
So you think he was a responsible social critic and that he didn't just agitate, but he tried to get people to cogitate?
Well, maybe he did. And I think that was his point. He wanted to make people aware and respond.
You know, and I know this can be a difficult or daunting topic for some people. And, you know, let's not stop people not from attempting difficult topics on talk show in just an hour. But I want to encourage you to call in because I know there's got to be some burning question you've wanted to discuss. And maybe you think you could use some pointers on it or just broach the subject and see where it goes. Because this is the value of community radio. You get to put a healthy idea out there or maybe lance the boil on an unhealthy idea. And remember some time ago, Cecil and I were talking about how how online communication and communities are really only seeing a few examples of a thought or an idea and basing their online communication on that. Well, we want to nudge it so that instead of having that kind of murmuration, you know, that like you see in bird lights, we want to have more of an open-eyed connection with more than a few members of our community and maybe put a healthier idea or put a good idea or concept out into the ether so that it can grow. You know, maybe you've got a good idea whose time has come and you get to share it with us here. So the phone number is 503-231-8187 and we'll go to our next caller.
Good morning, Robbie.
Hey, good morning. I was really trying to hold my call back just because I called way too much, but when you brought up the stand-up comedy stuff, there's some perspectives I wanted to share. I do stand-up comedy here in Portland. I have for about maybe 7 years off and on. I had a show for a couple of years that I ran weekly. And in the early 2016, there was when Donald Trump was getting inaugurated, there was some jokes that I thought, well, it was really interesting, because sometimes it would hit and it would just, people thought it was funny. And then other times there were people that were just so taken back. But the joke was basically, you know, Portland was, you know, nights of protest when Donald Trump first got inaugurated. And I was doing a joke being like, well, you know what? I'm part of a group that's stoked Trump's in office. We're a group of anarchists that are stoked Trump's in office because somebody's got to burn down the wall. And people... So, and that's, I guess that's the thing, is like when you have people that are, I guess, a little bit easier or not so on edge, because one time I did it and I swear to gosh, it was, everybody just looked at me like I was the worst person in the world for even suggesting that, because A, I was an anarchist, and then B, they heard that I was somehow happy Trump was in office and they didn't get the joke. You know what I mean? It kind of fell on deaf ears. So, but that's been very rampant in the last, you know, since Donald Trump has taken office, is a lot of people are on edge and they weren't really listening to the joke aspect of it. They were more just kind of triggered by words. And so that's been something that I've been having to tackle and grasp with here in the city, you know, since, ever since, really. But, you know, I think it's just kind of, I mean, and I love the topic that you bring up, because it's like, how do we connect with people? How do you, you know, read the room? You know, how can you, you know, and that stuff, as, you know, with comedy is stuff that's always going through my head. But, you know, and outside of the comedy realm, I do always try to engage in conversations with people that I don't agree with. And I actually find it quite, I find it very, beneficial. I don't know. I find it very good when you can have these discussions without letting the tempers rise, without raising your voice. And I think a big part of that is being able to listen to the other side. And this is just kind of silly, but I had a conversation with a friend of mine who was trying to convince me that the earth was flat.
And so when you gave your answer, how did they respond?
What was that?
I said, so when you gave a little pushback, how did they respond?
Well, that's exactly it. I don't push back right away. I embrace it. You know, I told this friend of mine, I said, you know what? I've tried so hard to believe that the earth is flat, but I'm really into astronomy. And he was like, okay. And so that kind of opened it up right there. He was willing to listen to what my problems were with it. And we weren't just right away at like, oh, well, you're listening to this, or you're reading the wrong news, or, you know, instead of that disagreement right off the bat, I was like, well, you know, like, what do you say about planets? You know, I can clearly see the Galilean moons around Jupiter with, you know, just binoculars. And these planets are moving at different rates than the stars. And not to get off the subject about, you know, debating a flat earther, but he listened and we were able to have a good discussion. And I actually gave him some, you know, some suggestions, because he was trying to say that, well, what about the ocean or the Great Lakes? You know, there's no curvature. And I was like, because that's a lake. And this, you know, the sphere is, that's beyond the point. But we had a really good conversation, and both of us left with more information and more knowledge about those subjects. And I feel like the biggest thing is there's a lot of, as you say, people shut down discussions now. And that's so dangerous, because it's so arrogant to think that we know, you know, all there is to know about said subjects. So now I'm not going to talk with you at all, because I find that's kind of the problem.
Well, I think one thing that you mentioned is something that I think more people should practice, and that was finding common ground instead of immediately going into your own corner, continuing the conversation, the dialogue, so that you can find a common ground, so that you can then have a conversation. But that takes some time and willingness to explore with the person. So
I will say I found the common ground in Antarctica. We both admit something weird is going on there.
Great. And another thing I think you said as a performer that I think is important is being able to read the room. You know who you're in conversation with, and therefore, you know, some things might, you might say some things to some people that you wouldn't say to some things to other people, just because of who they are, where they are. So that's important insight to have in conversation, be able to read the room.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much, and I'll listen in off air. Thank you.
Thank you. You know, I appreciate some of the points he brought up. And I was reading this article a couple of weeks ago about these wrestlers. So, and I'm going to share you with you the link on that. But apparently, these wrestlers had come up with this project that they used whenever they were performing. And, you know, Portland for a while had a wrestling scene, and a lot of cities have their wrestlers come up, and it's high drama, you know, with fake falls and getting the audience riled up for participation, et cetera, et cetera. Well, they had this shtick wherein these two pro wrestlers had developed the progressive liberal to be the bad guy at matches. And that was really a wonderful way for people to, like, express themselves until we hit a certain speed bump in our political engagement. And, you know, with Trump coming online, a lot of things got ugly. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he aimed for the baser position in any conversation, you know, accuse people, belittle them, you know, just he was a base person when it right. came to engagement. And that dynamic that used to work, which used to be kind of like a safety valve in the community and allowing them to address political divides, it went from being fun to being dangerous, to the point where the two guys who came up with this idea of, you know, the progressive wrestler bad guy, progressive liberal, it became dangerous for them. People would actually want to attack them and kill them and hang them and maim them.
Mm-hmm.
And so it seems like one of the key things that we have to do in the conversation, like both Robbie said, is find some common language, but then also, as Coria had indicated, you know, be willing to call out where the boundary is.
Yes.
You know, and to keep it in the higher functioning area of our brain and not devolve down to animals, because that's you know, people, we have anger, we have frustration, but you gotta be responsible. You gotta have integrity with the way you release that stuff. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I think so. I think to be able to, it certainly is important to have integrity. It's also important to be able to listen and to be able to, for me, I want to approach people assuming that their intent is good and honorable. And then go from there. That, you know, we may have disagreements, but I think you probably want to do the right thing. You're just a bumbling idiot, but you want to do the right thing.
Well, my feelings are hurt. I think you attacked me.
Yeah. Right. And speaking of attack, as you were speaking earlier, I did a quick search. And, you know, there is Portland Wrestling Continues, and there is a great match happening this Saturday. So it's called Airing of Grievances. So
oh, really? Okay.
So in North Portland, you can go there and air grievances. But I digress. I'm sorry.
No, that was funny. You know. And I know some people are sitting over here and they're thinking, you know, I want hard-hitting, biting topics, Celeste and Cecil. And the truth is, you know, dealing with conflict is about as hard-hitting and biting as you can get. If you disagree, then you might want to check how things are going over in the Ukraine, for example, you know. And that was an ideological disagreement that has blown up. So, you know, scope sometimes is not necessarily a key element. It's, you know, the intensity of the conflict or maybe the nature of it. And so why we want to have these hard conversations. You know, race is a big, hard conversation in Portland. Policing is a big, hard conversation in Portland. And we want to be able to have these conversations, both in terms of our social circles, but then in a larger governance system as well. So, you know, that's one reason why we encourage you to come and talk to us here at the Electronic Coffee House. and coffee table or fence, if you will, and you know, figure out some ways that we could keep engaging with each other.
Yeah, I think it's so important to be willing to, as you said, keep engaging. It's so easy to pick up your marbles and walk away. The challenge in relationships and life in general is just to keep at it. Wake up each morning and keep doing it. It isn't easy, and it may take a long time before it seems to be easy. But I think, again, if you are willing to engage with the other, to honor and respect them, it is possible to make progress, and not necessarily to prove that you are right, but to create a community in which all people are heard and valued. And it takes work. And it means putting up with people who you disagree with, putting up with people who seem to be people who are just wrong all the time. But I think part of being on this sphere of Earth, and I assuming that most people think it is a sphere and that it's not flat, but on this sphere of Earth, that we have to find ways in which we engage one another and to be able to listen to one another and to be willing to say, I disagree, but how do we move forward from there? We have a couple of more minutes. 503-231-8187. You're listening to More Talk Radio. We have one last call. And good morning, Dempsey. Good morning.
Yes, good morning. How y'all
good
doing?
Good morning. Just fine. How are you?
I'm good. I thought it was very interesting that the mention of Dick Gregory. Because he's just like, for, I think he was a great mind and important. And I looked up like what books he wrote, because I know he was a writer. Wow. He ran for president. I think yeah. He was the first black man to write, I mean, to run for president. And he has some book titles I can't say completely on the radio.
Okay. I have my finger on the button. Okay. Yeah.
Oh. Right. Like N-word.
Yeah, the N word, which I read at a young age.
There's another one called Up From N Word, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. But I don't know, and that speaks also to the fact that he was a comedian, but a well-read and articulate person who spoke up, and he was an activist. And today, a lot of people, we get our news sometimes directly from the comedians, like The Daily Show, or I can't remember the name of the British guy, This Week or Last Week Tonight or whatever.
Yes.
Right. But and then I really don't know what happened with Dick Gregory in his older age. His mind seemed to be gone all, I don't know, all different directions. Like when he starts talking about how Michael Jackson was killed by the FBI because of lasers to his wrist, I'm like, come on, Mr. Gregory, like, what happened? You know, but you know what I mean. And the fact that like he couldn't be interviewed because people get he would get angry with somebody when they would question him, and he would like shut him down as if he knows everything. So he's a very knowledgeable person, but like, I don't know, he lost some of his authority in speaking because, I mean, yeah, he just went off too far.
Yeah, when he showed some wavering in his faculties, folks didn't know when he was being a social critic or being a nut.
Yeah. And maybe, you know, maybe he just really did know a whole bunch that we all don't know. Because he had all those years of analyzing American society, all those decades that we didn't have.
Okay.
I think I believe he was the first comedian, black comedian, to be able to sit on the couch at a talk show, whatever talk show that was, back in the day, Tonight Show maybe.
Yeah, the Tonight Show with Johnny Carson.
Tonight Show. Yeah. I think he was with Jack Parr, but yes.
Jack Parr.
Well, unfortunately, we're going to have to let you go, Dempsey. We do appreciate your call, but we are out of time.
Okay.
Well, thank you, everybody who calls. Thank you, everybody who's listening. Thank you, everybody who supports your community connection, KBOO Portland. Go to our website and please donate. Support us now. Thank you.
You are tuned in to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming on the web at kboo.fm.
Hey, Michael here. I'm with the Tin Can Phone Podcast, a radio show where you can hear about the influence incarceration has straight from the source. We tell